Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here on LA Talk Radio, the world's most irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk radio station. Welcome, everybody, as you always are. And today, oh my goodness, we're going to have a fabulous talk. I have a great guest, and you all are going to learn a lot. This is, if you've looked at my social media this morning, now, this is not only for gentlemen to listen to out there. Women, girls, boys, you're going to learn a lot because my guest has come out with an amazing book, and we're going to be talking more about that in just a little bit. But let me just give you a taste of what we're talking about today from what my special guest tells us. A majority of men don't want to be told what to do. What? You're kidding me. I can't believe that. That's no way. I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself. But they do want to improve how they deal with stressful moments and, of course, the intense conversations. No, not just the ones with your partner, but those ones at work and in new and long-term relationships as well. So today you're going to hear insights about old patterns and conflicting urges that can mess things up for you, men and women. You're going to learn a lot today, okay? And also we're going to find out how men can use creative new ways to deal more mindfully with challenging moments. So stay right here. Don't go anywhere. Stay on the couch. If you have to, keep it rolling, come in and out. By the way, you guys know all of my shows are available right after we go live here in the archives on latalkradio.com. Pull up my webpage and boom, you can hear the show again. All of the shows are available for free on iTunes podcasts as well on the couch here. So we're going to hear some fascinating information today about why men are pulled in two opposing directions during most conversations. You feeling me, guys? Okay. Also, what works and what doesn't work with most men for improving things. What causes good men to become grumpy, edgy, or shut down? And what can help enormously. And also we're going to talk to men about choosing wisely in the sensual realm. I hear about this all the time when I'm seeing couples in my practice. It's a big issue. So you're going to hear a lot more insights today from my special guest right in the studio with me live. Without further ado, I want to introduce psychologist, author, Leonard Felder. Hi, Len. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. I'm glad I'm here. I'm good to meet you. Good to talk to you.
Thank you so much for this book. I mean, I am referring it out to my clients already. I mean, it's lovely. So the book, by the way, is called The Dilemma of the 21st Century Male, Choosing Each Day Between Retro and Forward. I love it. What a great book it is. It's for males of all ages, plus the people who care about them. Women, if you really want to get insight into men, you've got to read this book as well. Because, I mean, really, it was just beautiful the way that you laid it out. And, well, you're a man. And you've been a psychologist for many years. And also, by the way, let me just throw this in, along with all those accolades, too. And we could take up, by the way, the whole show to talk about what Len has done. But just a taste here. He's written 12 books on Jewish spirituality, personal growth that have sold over 1 million copies and were translated into 14 languages.
I didn't do any of the translating.
Why not, Len? I'm so disappointed in you.
Yo hablo español un poquito como un gringo. I speak Spanish a little bit like a
gringo. Es poquito español. But he's been invited nationwide to lead discussions on the connection between Jewish texts and daily psychological dilemmas at 35 temples and synagogues, 14 Jewish book fairs, plus dozens of churches and interfaith events. He's also appeared. You've seen him before, guys. He's all over the place. I know you've seen him. He's on over 200 radio, television programs, including Oprah, The Today Show, CNN, The CBS Early Show, NBC Nightly News, National Public Radio, Canada AM, on the BBC in London, and many more. So let's get to the book that just I have never read a better book about man brain.
Thank you.
And men's behaviors. It is it comes from a scientific point of view and all of your experience that you've had. And I always love to ask my special guests, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, it'd been cooking for a while. You know, a lot of times you're pregnant with a book for a long time, and this one was for a long time. And I kept being told by agents and publishers, no, you can't write a book for men or about men or about the people who love men, because no one's going to read that book. You know, the men don't read self-help books. Let's just face it. They don't take advice. So I kept delaying. And then on November 8th, 2016, something happened in our country. Mm. I won't mention what that was. And I thought, oh my goodness.
Let me think.
We've got a new role model as to who people might be following as being what it means to be a man. I better get this book out there before there's real danger. And if you voted for the guy, look, I love you, but there's something scary about having us go backwards. And so I'd already had the title, you know, you have to choose every day whether you're going to go be Mr. Retro Male or Mr. Mindful Male.
Yes.
And Mr. Retro Male is still there, and we have to watch out. And one of the other things that inspired me, there was someone in my office, and he said that his daughter said, if you keep acting like Trump, wanting to win at all costs and cutting me off and being defensive and being, she just said, you're not going to see much of me. This was a teenage daughter.
Whoa.
And this guy loved his daughter. He didn't want to lose his daughter.
Yeah.
And he thought, oh my gosh, I don't want to do therapy, but I got to do something that I don't want to lose my daughter.
Yes. Yes, exactly. No, that's, so you said, you know what? No, this is, I've had this book in me a long time, so that I'm going to do it. I'm just going to put it out there and let everybody understand what's going on.
Right.
And, you know, what I love about this as well is it is, okay, I hate to say the words, but it is a self-help book in that it gives insight to men and women to understand sort of how a man is trying to function in this 21st century dilemma we're dealing with right now.
Right.
And
by the way, in case, you know, Julia, in the bio, you were mentioning some Jewish stuff and, you know, now we're talking about self-help. For people who are allergic to spirituality or religion, or for people who are allergic to any advice or any experts, the book is not about telling you what to do. The book is about giving you choices, giving you some stories about stuff that works for people and stuff that doesn't work for people.
Yes,
and then the reader gets to decide, I like this, I don't like that, I disagree with the author, the author's full of it. You know, they can say stuff like that.
Sure they can, absolutely, okay. And I appreciate you coming out with that. Okay. But what I think is going to happen, and I could be wrong, but people reading this gentleman who are reading this book are going to say, oh my gosh, he knows my brain. That's me. Wow. What works much better? What I better do this. You know, these are all really important and relevant points about so many aspects of
men. But with men, it's a cost-benefit analysis. It's like, do I really want to have this long fight with my partner, or do I want to lose my kid, or do I want to keep getting into conflicts at work? Or do I want to at least try something different, see if that works?
Yes.
It's costs and benefits. It's not the right answer from the expert.
Yes, exactly. No, beautifully said. Thank you for that. So let's talk about some of the dilemmas going on with men. So you start off sort of by explaining how men are pulled by two different urges. So can you explain a little bit more about what that means?
Well, if I'm tired and if my wife wants to tell me a story about her day, and if it's something that she's already covered 500 times, I have two choices. I could either be Mr. Retro Male.
Right.
And I could say, honey, you've already told me that story. Or can you cut to the chase? Or can you get to the point? That will start about a 2-week problem.
Okay? True.
Yeah. Or I can be Mr. Mindful Male.
Yes.
And I know how to be Mr. Mindful Male. Mr. Mindful Male says, you know, I take a breath. And I remember this is the most important person in the world to me, and I love my wife dearly. And she sometimes does repeat stories, and she sometimes goes long. And so I might say to her, you know what? I've got about 20 minutes of listening left in me. Can we not do 30? And she says, great. Now that gives her 20 minutes. That's different from cut to the chase or get to the point.
Huh.
And it lets me know I can really show up for those 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I can really listen.
Yeah.
I can listen with an open heart. I can care. Ooh. And then sometimes, even though I'm a therapist and I'm intuitive, I
right.
still don't know what she wants.
Sure. So
I will sometimes say to her, are you looking for me to just shut up and listen?
Oh, I love that.
Did you want me to give you some advice?
Right.
Or do you want me to just like try to draw out of you what you want to do? I don't know which one you want. And she said, okay, what I want right now is, and she'll tell me. And
mm-hmm.
it's usually shut up and listen. So, but
right.
it's great
exactly.
to know. It's an open book test. You can get an A on the test because you asked what's on the test.
Yes, exactly. No, that's, it makes so much sense. But I think, you know, as we know about the studies of the brain and how our neural patterns are habituated to certain ways of behavior. Now we kind of have, oh, wife talk, shut off, whoop, bloop, you know. But it is, you know, it's just sort of practicing some of the tools that you share in your
right.
book, by the way, The Dilemma of the 21st Century Male, in case you just tuned in here on LA Talk Radio. And it's written by my in-studio special guest, amazing man who's written so many books. And by the way, I'm going to tell you how you can find out more about him, Leonard Felder, PhD. Dr. Leonard, I call him.
Okay.
And anyway, so we're talking about the book and sort of what men have been going through and through the ages. And so let's not go retro. Let's go into the new age here. Let's go into a higher conscious being and, you know, become the best you can. And women, I really encourage you to pick up this book as well, because it really explains a lot of things that you don't understand about why men do the things they do. And we'll be talking about that. So here's a good one. You talk about how many times when family partners or even therapists try to help men open up mm-hmm. and improve a challenging issue in their lives. You know, honey, how does that make you feel? Ah, they get defensive. They tune out. And so what is it that causes normal, you know, healthy men to freeze up?
Well, if you're a guy and you were told 10,000 times as a kid that you can't be too emotional and you shouldn't, you know, hang on your mother's apron strings and you got to be tough and you got to be strong, and someone says to you, honey, tell me how does that make you feel, or can you see how that makes me feel? If you hear that as a guy, all of a sudden we switch into the language of feelings.
Yeah.
And for about 90% of men, only 90% of men, that's a scary place to go.
Yeah,
it's like, well, wait a minute, I'm not good at that. I'm not comfortable with that.
Right.
And now she's speaking her language. She's on her home turf. I'm the visiting team. I'm at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
So a lot of times when a partner, you know, she'll say to him, or if it's a gay couple, he'll say to the partner, they'll say, you know, can't you see how that makes me feel? And you see the listener say, what? And you see deer in the headlights eyes, and you think, something just shut off inside there.
Mm.
And then the person gets doubly incensed and says, and you don't even care. You're not even responding. You're not even saying anything right now. And I'm laying out my guts. So what works better, I'm not saying there's something wrong with that.
Yes,
if you're with the 10% of guys who can actually speak that language,
right,
go for
it. Exactly.
But if you're with the 90% who don't, try not to judge him. Try not to beat him over the head with a 2x4. But come in through a door that he actually can open and that he speaks that language. If you say to a guy, you know, tell me what was running through your head at that moment.
Yeah.
He'll answer almost every time.
Right.
He remembers what was running through his head at that moment. Or tell me what was going on inside you at that moment. Were you comfortable? Were you uncomfortable? What was going on? And most guys remember, I felt kind of twitchy. I felt like getting out of here. I felt like, you know, they'll talk to you about the process. But as soon as you switch over to the feelings language, they're scared. And again, if you say, and don't you understand how that makes me feel? All he hears from that statement is, I'm in trouble. I'm cornered. She's busted me, and she's speaking in a language that I don't speak.
Yes.
I think I either have to bolt, or I have to snap back, or I have to get controlling. That's not what the partner wants at that moment.
Right.
They want answers. They want a conversation.
Sure. And it is, and you and I find this so much in practicing couples. It's not that, and I'm judging, it's man brain and survival, basically, but it's not that you're being attacked or judged or... And you're right. I think the way a lot of women or partners of any sexual orientation approach, you know, their men is maybe can be a little too accusatory and can be judgmental. And it's changing the tone of voice, it's changing the approach and the body language. And right.
And I don't want to put all the burden on you know, the female partner, right, or the gay partner. I want to make sure that the man can also do stuff. I mean, he can know, okay, this is one of those moments where I'm starting to get overwhelmed. This is one of those moments where I'm going to have to breathe and say, wait a minute, let's change the language so that I can speak it.
Yes.
You know, if you say to the person, wait, let's slow down, mm-hmm, and let's change it from I'm a bad guy and I'm being cornered.
Right.
Why don't we brainstorm together as teammates? Men know how to play team sports.
Oh, yes.
So if we're brainstorming together as teammates, then there's no good guys and bad guys, and there's nobody who's cornered. Ooh. Now we're starting to creatively problem solve together.
Great. No, that's really true. So it's you know, get rid of the how do you feel. Talk more about the process. What are you thinking? I think thinking is is a better word, you know.
Which is sad, because most women are really good at the language of feelings. Mm-hmm, and they say, well, thinking, then you're just going to be in your head. Mm-hmm. Well, if the head is the route to get to this person's feelings, go through the head, because you're not going to get there through the feeling words.
Yes, absolutely. So, I totally agree. And I think that is the best way. And it really does help the partner understand 90%, I guess, as you say, of how, you know, men process things. And it's just, it's survival mechanisms. It's the brain, and especially in this day and age. I also think, there's been so many changes about men having to, you know, start to feel more, that whole push back in the 80s, right? I mean, there was a huge push about, you better start to get more warm and fuzzy and feel more. There's something wrong with you.
Right. And people made fun of Phil Donahue, and they made fun of Alan Alda. They made fun of people who were in touch with their feelings. They thought, these people are betraying the male race, you know.
Right.
But in a sense, they were just expressing their feelings, and they were good at it. But the men who had a tougher time with that, mm-hmm, they felt like, how am I ever going to catch up? I don't want to, mm-hmm, be one down. Men hate being one down.
Yes. So, no, that makes sense. No, it really does. It's great. All right. So we've got some tools here, and there are a lot more in the book, in Len Felder's book, The Dilemma of the 21st Century Male. And I love this, choosing each day between retro and forward. Day by day, step by step, right? Using the tools in the book of sort of thinking and, how should I perceive this possibly?
And also, even if you're a really enlightened, you know, beautiful, peaceful, zen-y kind of guy, you still probably have this controlling, sneaky guy inside you that you have to learn how to master, because otherwise it's going to sneak out. In my family, both my kid and my wife, they say to me, you're using that soft therapist voice right now, but I can tell you're impatient. And I go, wow, I am busted. Now, I could argue with them.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? I'll lose the argument.
Yes.
I will lose the argument. I will turn them into not only just having noticed that I'm impatient, but I was trying to hide it, but now they'll also know that I'm full of it and I'm covering up. And the cover-up is where people get impeached usually.
Well, right.
So
that's right.
So I have to at that moment go, okay, these are the people that God or spirit or my life has given me to teach me how to grow up in areas where I didn't have to grow up before.
Yes.
And so, if they say I'm impatient, and I'm using that soft therapist voice, but I'm really covering it up, I got to listen. I got to take a breath and say, okay, could I be a little more patient? Could I be a little more there for my partner and or for my kid, so that I don't, you know, become the kind of parent who sends their kid into therapy for 20 years because they could never communicate?
That's exactly right. Makes sense. You know, they'll be on your couch.
They'll be on someone else's. They'll be on your couch.
Right. Thank you. can we talk a little bit more about men helping them, you know, feel stronger and more articulate?
Okay.
Some of the tools that they can use, you know, when their partner may come at them and putting pressure on them or whatever. And again, I'm not blaming partners, women, or, you know, any sexual orientation or the partner, but what are some of the tools that you might suggest in your book?
Well, there's this old tool that I didn't make up. Other people have always done this, and it's called the loving sandwich. Yeah. And that's where you start by, you know, you want something from someone, or you want them to wake up to something. And so you start with something positive. You say, you know what? You do so many things around the house to help out here. But I got to tell you, we've got to brainstorm together. So the first part was the loving part of the sandwich. And the middle part, the tofu or the meat, is where you say to them, but, you know, we've got to come up with a better solution because the dishes are sitting in the sink overnight and I'm getting a little crazy. Maybe I'm a little bit OCD, a little obsessive compulsive, or whatever I am. But I am that. So can we come up with a better plan for getting the dishes? And then, and I know, and then you end with the second loving part, which is, and I know we can figure out a way to do this because we're both smart and we both really want us, you know, to get along well. Mm. So you've given two loving messages, mm-hmm. one brainstorming invitation. There was no put down. There was no cornering the person. There was no shaming them. There was no saying, you are the most, you are just like your father and you never help out around the house. And you know, all that stuff.
Yes.
Which now we've got a trial going on. You're the prosecuting attorney. We've got a trial. A trials last a long time and there's a whole lot of delays and motions and all sorts. You don't need that. You just want to get the dishes cleaned.
No, exactly. It's just let's work together, and it is the language,
and
right?
It's hard because it can be really hard. Frustrating. You know, where partners promise something and don't deliver, that's really hard.
Yeah,
and even that could be a loving message. You can say, you know what, you are such an honest and good person, and when you promise stuff to me, and then you don't deliver, I get confused because I fell in love with you because you're an honest and good person, and I care about that you're an action person who gets things done, and then on this one. Nothing's getting done. Help me out here. Help me. I can't figure it out.
Yes.
And so that allows the person to be your brainstorming partner or the person who can solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Not
yes.
the person who's evil.
No, that's right. The evil person. Exactly. Speaking about which, you know, I think another one of the most common issues that I see in my practice is... women complaining about their partners or gay couples complaining about their partners who are always grumpy. They're just so moody and grumpy, which is kind of the reverse sometimes with men saying, oh, that's right. It's that time of month. I better back off. But, you know, more women, you know, and or any, like I said, orientation, complaining about their men who are, they're just, God, they just shut off sometimes and they're just so grumpy. And you have a great chapter in your book, The Dilemma of the 21st Century Male, about why this happens. So can you share with the listeners what's going on here?
Well, if someone gets told that they're grumpy or that they're a downer or that they sometimes are negative or critical, that feels like a put down.
Yeah.
But if you explore with somebody, you know, something's going on where every once in a while you switch from somebody who like is a can-do person who's there with me, and then all of a sudden you're gone. You know, what is it? And can Let's figure it out. Let's be little scientists or little researchers together and figure this one out. Because we're in this together. We're both trying to solve this together. Mm-hmm. So now you're teammates again.
Yeah.
And the teammates might find some interesting stuff. You might find out that there's a certain food that is wonderful and delicious. And oh my gosh, do I love reaching for that comfort food. But I tend to get sleepy, grumpy, or shut down after it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or it might be, you know, drugs or alcohol. Or it might be just a certain fatty foods or greasy stuff. I forgot to eat. I waited too long and the hypoglycemia kicked in. Or I ate too much and the early diabetes is kicking in. Whatever it is, it doesn't mean you're not a man. It means, wow, this is getting interesting now. I'm a man who's got to figure out how to master this one too. Mm-hmm. And I've got a partner who's not putting me down about it. Mm-hmm. This partner actually wants to help me figure this one out.
Yes. No, really well said. It really does have a lot to do with blood sugar and physiological effects of food intake,
right.
Things like that. What are some of the other factors in causing men to be, you know, in bad moods and grumpy?
Well, another one is, you know, there's this chemical inside men, and women have it too, but men seem to have a little more. It's testosterone.
Just a little more.
Yeah, and, you know, testosterone is really weird. I have a friend who's got a daughter, and the daughter was always a great second baseman on her baseball team, and she was always wearing men's clothes, and she was always, and she decided as a teenager that she was thinking she'd making the full transition to becoming a man.
Okay.
And so she decided with her endocrinologist to start taking testosterone, and she hated it. She said, testosterone's weird.
So angry.
It makes me short fuse and angry, and I want to be one up in all conversations. I want to dominate, and it's like, what happened here? I want to be a man, but I don't want to be that man. Okay.
Right.
So she eventually lightened up on that and she decided to be, you know, her gender fluid self in different ways. But that was very instructive for me. That was a neutral person saying,
exactly.
There's something about this testosterone we got to watch out for. So we live in a society now where there's commercials on TV and on the radio all the time to say, you know, if you really want to be a man, you want to be like Barry Bonds and you know, have all sorts of horrible things happen in your life. You know,
right.
And have everybody go, God, this guy's got the shortest fuse of anybody. Not to mention all sorts of other freaky things that are happening with his body. So if you want to be that testosterone guy, you could get muscles.
Yeah.
You know, but strange things are going to happen, especially with mood swings.
Yes.
And, you know, there's one joke in the book. I said I pictured, you know, Lance Armstrong and Raphael Palmieri and Barry Bonds and all these guys right. waiting in the same doctor's office, you know, for their refill of prescriptions and fighting with each other, you know, as to who gets to go first, you know.
Exactly.
So and I hope we don't get sued for all those names I just mentioned. But I think it's all documented in lots of places.
It is.
So testosterone is something we have to learn how to manage.
Yes.
And sometimes if the testosterone's too high or too low or something's going on, or maybe somebody just had an orgasm and then they start to like withdraw because their body just seems a little bit off, hormonally off. Men have hormones. You know, we talk about women's hormones, but men have hormones, and those hormones are pretty strong.
Yes, they really are. You know, and it's, of course, environmental issues going on as well. The pressures that men have,
right,
and women, of course, and families. And so many times we have parents who are both working, and then there's children, and you know, there's just, it's such a chaotic world right now, especially with our leaders who are retro, as you said. So I think, you know, it's the environmental stressors as well. And, you know, combined with, like you said, the testosterone. And
I just want to give a defense of our leaders for just a minute here. So,
okay,
you know,
here we go.
Even though, you know, I have lots of places where I disagree with the president, I feel for the president. If you look at his backstory, he's got a Germanic father with a huge narcissism problem who's beating the crap out of his two kids.
That's right.
Okay. And Donald's got this brother who is really charismatic and really charming and really sensitive and really social, who starts drinking, collapses, and dies in his 30s. Donald does not drink.
Right.
Donald never drinks because Donald says, I don't want to be soft and I don't want to be defeated like my brother was. Mm-hmm. And so Donald became this counterpuncher who's been punching people back.
Sure.
And that's the strategy he picked.
Right.
So I feel bad for little Donald, you know, if it were on my couch or, you know, if he was just a real estate developer from New York, we could laugh at his funny gold buildings. That'd be something. But as president, it gets a little scary. So.
Yes. No, I appreciate, you know, your thoughtfulness and really understanding that as a psychologist and an insightful man. You know, I really do. And I get it. And I think a lot of people, you know, just want to sometimes sort of overlook that, you know, he's a dictator, period. He's a bully. You know, and I understand that. And we see the behaviors that are a little frightening and some of the regulations and laws he wants to pass through. And
right. And we can learn from that. Like when Megyn Kelly was beaten up by him after that first debate in 2015, she said to him in the second interview, 9 months later, she said, can't you see the chaos it creates for me and my family that all these people are attacking me? And that when you go after somebody, it really is scary.
Yes.
And all he could say in response, which is what you a lot of times hear from men in a in an argument with their spouse or at work, is, I'm the victim here. I'm the one who's being picked on. You asked me an aggressive question at the beginning of that debate.
Right.
I have to hit back.
Right.
So if you want to be that guy, you can be that guy. There's a lot of guys in a lot of professions who are hitting back all the time, you know?
Yes.
You know, but they eventually go down.
Yes.
There's not a perfect justice in the world, but there's a lot of justice in the world, you know?
Well, there is, you know.
So sometimes, you know, the guy who's always hitting back and always one-upping gets away with it for a while, and then eventually somebody comes out and says, you know what? Mm-hmm. I can take this guy down.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And they've got
really
the dirt to take that guy down.
Boy, they do. Yep. And
they're real happy to share it.
So, that's right. And there's so much going on that we don't know about that is going on underground right now that they're checking into as well. So next, you know, we'll find out who comes up next, you know, and who's going to slip in there and how the world will change. The world will change, hopefully, in the next election. But anyway, moving on now. Okay. I do want to talk also a little bit more about men dealing with anxiety and depression or distractibility. And they do seem to have different symptoms than women do. So, can you share a little bit more about these symptoms? And of course, we have hormones to blame as well. Women can always blame it on the hormones. I mean, that's legit.
Uh-huh.
It's really a little more difficult for men to do that, but we talked about that. But so what are the men's different symptoms dealing with anxiety and depression? How did those good feeling chemicals get flushed out? Fascinating.
Okay,
too.
So we're going to talk about the flushing out of chemicals. Yeah, but first, I got to say, it's really hard for men to even deal with the subject of anxiety or depression or distractibility or ADD or ADHD because men are supposed to be Mr. Ever Ready who can handle anything. Mm. Now, women have a lot of pressure on them to be Ms. Every Ready.
Yeah.
But women have a little bit more permission in our society to sometimes have a down mood or a down day and say, you know, I'm a little overwhelmed by this or that. They're allowed to admit that. Men are not supposed to admit that stuff. So if you even ask a man, you tell me, have you ever dealt with depression, to get into my private space, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
So, so what I often tell clients is the very gentle story about how our chemicals work. And, and this is the perfect description for it, but it's close.
Yes.
So you've got these God-given or nature-given chemicals in your brain. Mm. They're the feel-good chemicals. Mm-hmm. And they've got nice names, norepinephrine and dopamine and serotonin, and they feel really good. When you've been jogging, when you've been weightlifting, when you're on a good day, when you're sailing, when you're making love, these chemicals are rushing through you and you're saying, wow, I love my life. Yes. Oh, this is great. Okay. So those are your chemicals.
Right.
And in 10 to 20% of the population, they somehow get peed out. They get flushed out of the body because your body, for some reason, releases them too much, too quickly.
Right.
And doesn't hold on to them. So you're not able at that moment to hold on to your chemicals that feel good.
Yes.
And you're sort of metal against metal grinding.
Yes.
I'm trying to get through my day, but I don't have any lubrication. Yes. Dr. Ruth used to always say, lubrication. That was her favorite word. You know, you don't have any lubrication on your nerve endings right now. And, and trying to listen to your spouse or your kids and trying to deal with your boss at work when you don't have any lubrication on your nerve endings, good luck with that.
Yes.
So that's why there are these chemical helpers that say, there's these medications that hold on to serotonin reuptake inhibitors, means we're not going to let you pee out or flush out your good feel-good chemicals.
Yes.
We're going to let you hold on to them a little longer.
Yes.
Now, for some people, that doesn't work. And I have to tell you, some people are so even pissed off about this whole subject.
Sure they are.
I had a woman in Michigan, where I'm originally from, write me a vicious letter and leave a vicious phone call saying, how dare you talk about medication in your book? And I said, well, I'm not a psychiatrist, and I didn't recommend medication. I said, talk to somebody who can explore with you the options. Maybe you're not going to be the medication person. Maybe maybe you'll pick another way to hold on to your chemicals. Maybe walking three times a day, or jogging, or more exercise, or acupuncture, or yoga, or something else will help you hold. If you're, you know, I often say to clients, I'll make a trade with you. If you're willing to up your exercise by 30% and get rid of the foods that are making you sluggish and depressed and anxious, I won't even recommend you to the psychiatrist that I think you need.
Yes.
Because you'll have proven you can do it without that.
Yes.
But if you can't do it without that, then let's figure out what else might work.
And the tools, of course, that you suggest to pull back on, you know, shortening the stress, you know, sessions and coping skills, and also how to make your life a little easier, not being so OCD at work. Or, you know, I have clients who work 10 to 12 hours a day because they think they have to. And well, it's Los Angeles and it's crazy. A lot of, you know, especially the media capital of the world here.
But even if you work in a high pressure, let's say you're a lawyer and you're your life is billable hours, and everything's got to be a billable hours. And if you don't fill up your day with billable hours, they'll kill you.
Yeah.
So you can still take mini sabbaticals.
That's right.
You can take a sabbatical one day a week.
Yes.
You can take a sabbatical 15 minutes a day. If you can't do 15 minutes, can you do 4 minutes? Can you close your eyes for 15 seconds at a stoplight?
Yes.
And breathe and say, you know what? I am opening up to energies that are beyond my anxious brain, and I'm going to let go for just 15 seconds and hopefully not longer, because then you'll get a ticket or someone starts tooting.
Honking at you.
But,
exactly.
But you have lots of time for mini sabbaticals, even right in the middle of a conversation. I once asked a therapist, are we allowed to go R-rated on this show?
Oh, we're fine.
Okay. So I once asked a therapist, a group of therapists, we were in a group session, and all of us were brainstorming about how we deal with our practice, and I said, when you're with a really angry and hostile client who's in your face, what do you do?
Yes.
So everybody had different answers.
Yes.
But this one woman said, she said, well, I squeeze my Kegel muscles at those moments. Okay.
Oh, my God.
So I thought to myself, well, how creative that is. You know, so she's having this good feeling at that moment while, you know, so that's her mini sabbatical.
Right.
Okay. She's in a stressful moment, in a stressful session. So, you know, in the movie The Caine Mutiny, he's rolling those little balls, or you can play. I often, and no one knows I'm doing this, I often play with the fingertips, because those are your acupressure points.
Yes.
And I'm getting an acupressure treatment while somebody is freaking out in front of me.
Right.
And I'm staying calm because I'm going to be the lifeguard who's going to help with this person, and I'm not going to freak out because they're punching me.
Right, right, exactly. No, that's really well put. I love the different, you know, defocusing techniques and all that. Yeah, or I do the havening when I'm like in front of someone. I'm kidding. Oh my gosh, the therapist is self-comforting. This is great. I'm getting a reaction from her. But I mean, no, it's really true. There are so many different ways that we can help.
And if you do it in an unobtrusive way, you won't be fired and you won't be, you know, sought out as being weird.
Yeah.
You can take good care of yourself and you can breathe. Like people who are in customer service jobs.
Yes, yes.
You know, you can breathe and say, you know what? Mm-hmm. My job is to comfort this person, even if they are way over the line of what is acceptable behavior.
Exactly. No, that's so true. You sure can. So, I mean, there really are ways that we can chill ourselves out during the day. And it's really a matter of taking good care of ourselves. And I don't mean to be sexist or anything, but I don't think men take as good of care of themselves as women do. They just don't think about it. They're always, you know, focusing, focus, focus, solve problems, focus. This is my interpretation that
I see. We're also not allowed to go to the doctor.
That's right.
If men have a physical ailment, well, we've got to somehow figure it out ourselves and handle it ourselves.
Yes.
And a lot of times there's a person in your life who's saying, could you please call the doctor? And that's a hard thing for us to do, to admit that we have to sometimes ask for help.
Yes.
But if we do live in an abundant universe with people who study for many years to try to help us, why don't we give them a call and let them at least brainstorm with us? They can't tell us what to do, but they can give us one of the options to consider.
What is that about men not wanting to go to the doctor? I'm fascinated with that because I'll share with you my personal experience in a moment, but I'm fascinated with, what is that about?
Well, the doctor is an authority figure. He's one up on us, or he or she is one up on us in that conversation, mm-hmm. and sometimes is rigid.
Yeah.
So why would we want to walk in and put ourselves in the place of somebody who's an authority figure who's going to get rigid and hit us over the head with a bunch of stuff?
Yes.
We're supposed to figure it out ourselves. That's a very male thing to do.
Gosh, it
is. So one of the ways to figure out yourself is bring in a team of cabinet advisors, including some doctors, therapists, and non-traditional doctors and therapists, and then figure out, as you're the president of your life, what you get to do. You haven't lost your power. You're not one down. You've got a good cabinet.
Yes, exactly. Especially if you have a nagging wife like me.
What was your doctor's story?
No, it was just my husband was tired all the time. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's tired. He's fatigued. He's working 10 hours a day. He comes home and falls asleep in the easy chair in his suit.
Right.
He's a suit, you know. So he's just passing out. I'm looking at him and looking at him. 6 months, you know. I'm just tired of that long day.
You got called a nag for that.
I was a nag. And so I said, that's it. I've made appointments. Physicals. You and I together. See the teamwork.
Oh,
we're
good.
Both having physicals. Good. You know, so he basically, if I hadn't have been a nag, and I'm not giving myself props or anything, but it's just this situation, he would have probably died.
You saved his life.
That's what he tells me. And I'm holding him to that all the time. No, I'm kidding. but
that's so important because you were doing it from a good intention.
Yes.
You were getting some pushback.
Yes.
You were getting called a couple names.
Yes.
But sometimes there's a way to do it. And you came up with the creative approach. You know, yours was, we're going to go there together for information seeking together because we're both smart people. That's different from you stubborn mule who won't call the doctor. I'm going to twist your arm.
Right. And also observations of every day you come home tired and you just want to, which adds and piles onto the negativity of, calling him out to not being allowed to just have downtime. But, you know, when it's different and I encourage everyone, you know, who has a partner out there and who's a little hesitant to go to the doctor and gets regular checkups, even if they're not fatigued all the time, just nudge them a little bit and do the teamwork because it really, my husband, his life is safe now. He's in remission. He had cancer and he's doing so much better.
Now that's such an important story.
Yeah.
And again, I'm glad you found the words and the approach that got the teamwork going again.
Oh, we did. And we thank you. And we have the most amazing doctors here in Cedars. It's just mind-boggling, wonderful place. So back to your book, by the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Michelle and my special guest, Dr. Leonard Felder. And his latest book is The Dilemma of the 21st Century Male, Choosing Each Day Between Retro and Forward. Come on, let's go forward. We're going to find out how we can get a move on and get a little healthier and feel better. This is a book for a feel-good book for men to understand who they are, and also for their partners or women in general, just to understand, you know, I have a lot of women who are single looking for a guy. I don't know how to deal with men. They're just so moody, or they're so difficult, or they're so... Read the book, folks, The Dilemma of the 21st Century Male. You will understand men a lot better.
And you'll also understand how to increase their feel-good chemicals and their feel-good participatory stuff instead of doing the things, you know, because sometimes if you keep doing the thing that brings out the moody guy, you have to say, can I try something different?
Yes, exactly. And there are wonderful, you know, helpful ideas in this book. We talked about at the beginning of the show, you know, some of the old traumas that can affect men's psychological moods. And you also suggest some tools that they can use in your book to help them through this trauma. Because a lot of people, I always go back. I always, you know, I'm eclectic like you. I use different modalities of orientation, psychological tools. And, you know, I always go back and look at what's going on in the home. What was your first 7 years like? What were you taking in like a sponge? What messages did you buy into? Right. And here you are at 40 some years old, and you're that person still, that little guy who's doing all these things, these defensive behaviors and not taking care of yourself. So maybe you can talk a little bit more about how men can use some of these psychological tools to help get rid of these old traumas that they're hanging on to.
Well, one of the things you get to explore is, what did I learn as a survival skill when I was little that worked then? I survived, but I keep reapplying it to situations that maybe it's not working as well. You know, so if you're the fight back, the punch back, the be defensive, that never let down your guard, that probably helped you survive some scary people that you grew up with, or that you encountered in school, or on the playground, or wherever you encountered them. But if your kids are afraid to be around you, and if your partner is constantly feeling like, wow, you really go off on me, and I love you so much, but when you go off, I just start making the plan on how to get away from you. You know, so then that punchback kind of guy isn't working in those situations, or if you're getting fired from jobs for going off on people. So going off on people is a great survival skill. You have to figure out, what were the traumatic things that happened that I learned this work on? Let's give it a gold watch. But let's retire it, or only bring it out when we really, really need it. Okay.
Right.
And so now you're the master of that traumatic memory. You're the master of the survival skill that you picked. You're the master of when to use it and when not to use it. You can do it. What you have to watch for is when people have those survival skills, and maybe your survival skill was overworking and trying to be a perfection because you know, somebody in your family was depressed and needed you to be the source of joy, whatever it was. If that's driving you to the place where it's making you ill, or it's making other people like alienated from you, then you get to figure out, how do I be the master of this thing so I can use it when I need it, but not when I don't need it?
That is so right. And there are so many different survival skills that people have that, you know, I try to help people with as well. You know, I point out, now, which one are you?
Right.
Do you run away? Do you book when it gets too scary out there? Are you the people pleaser? Did you always have to be that child in the family who was always happy and entertaining everybody? Were you the bully? Was that how you expressed your anger? And then people become afraid of you, and you're the difficult child. Or, you know, there's so many different styles.
And in some places, it really works. Like, I have a niece from Michigan, and she moved to New York, and she was living in a tough neighborhood and going to school there. And I taught her the don't F with me walk.
Because
if you're going to live in New York,
like
you don't do the have a nice day that we do out here. You need to let people know, don't mess with me.
Yes.
Okay? And so she learned the walk. She did the walk. She did much better once she learned the walk. And I taught her the walk.
Oh, that's beautiful. No, it really is.
But she doesn't use it all the time. She only uses it when she needs it.
Sure. Exactly.
After midnight, coming from the subway to her home.
Boy, is that's a gift. And that is really, and it, you know, you and I are very spiritual people. So, I mean, the body language is also tied up with energy. Body and mind follow and are joined.
Right.
So once you have that, as one of my teachers, who is a very grumpy Korean Taekwondo instructor, he taught me Taekwondo, self-defense. I wanted to learn that, you know. And he used to say, Michelle, he used to yell at me, you know, when you're walking out after your office at night, Taekwondo walk spirit. He would yell at me. He was kind of like Mr. Miyagi, right? But that was the thing.
And that's not going to make you a mean person. That's going to make you someone in this situation.
Yes.
I am being appropriate by sending out the message of, I'm not the person you want to mess with.
Exactly. No, that's so true. It really is. So people can change, men can change some of their old behavior patterns that they learned to help them survive, whatever it is. And you do give really good suggestions on how to sort of segue those into to a better way of handling some of the uncomfortable situations that
you're dealing
with.
Right, and moment to moment, you can give someone a do-over. My wife is so kind and generous. So for instance, if I say something to her and it's got a patronizing tone of voice or a condescending tone of voice or a hurried tone of voice, or, you know, she will offer me a do-over, which is so kind. She'll say, could you try that again without the few tone in the voice?
I love that.
Know, and I realized I could argue with her. Mm-hmm. I could say, no, it wasn't you. But she heard it. The tone was somewhere in there. And so I get to do a do-over. I go, okay, let me try it again. And I'll, only this time I'll try to, like, be a person who's really engaged with you and calm. And so giving your partner a do-over instead of going to war over they just did something unpleasant.
Exactly.
Now, if they won't go for the do-over, now you know, you can give them a second do-over, but at a certain point you have to say, what is it that you're not even willing to go for the peaceful solution that would end this conversation peacefully? And you want to go for the 2 week we hate each other, we're in separate rooms.
Right, exactly. And
is that the choice you want to make?
Yeah. Do you really want to do that? Or, you know, again, no, that's right. You know, I'm here to listen. What's going on? Mm-hmm. What's going on? And are you okay? Did you have a rough day?
Uh-huh.
That kind of thing is great too. But I love your wife. What an amazing woman. And I bet you didn't even have to teach her that.
No.
She's like that.
No, she had a father who was really controlling and judgmental, and so she learned how to protect herself. She once had him put a lock on her door in her bedroom when she was 14.
Wow.
And she said, Dad, you're the only person who knows how to do that. And so he put the lock on, and then she used the lock, and he said, wait a minute. And she said, Dad, that's why I put the lock there.
Smart woman. Yeah. That's great. All right, let's just briefly touch on, because we're running out of time here, as we always are. But this is amazing. I really want you guys to get a hold of this book, and I want you to find out more about Dr. Leonard Felder. What are some quick mindfulness strategies that kind of turn things around, you know, in situations that are uncomfortable for men?
So whether you're a spiritual person or not a very spiritual person, or you're allergic to spiritual religion, there's still a sentence you can say to yourself whenever you're around your kids or your loved ones or your partner, and you could say, is my heart open right now?
Mm.
If you ask yourself that question, if you answer it honestly, because if you're in a hurry, if you're impatient, if you're building a case to how right you are and how wrong the other person is, your heart is not open.
Mm.
And if your heart is open, it's going to feel different to you and the other person, and there's going to be a peaceful resolution to this conversation. If you're in the building a case, I'm right and you're wrong, it's going to take a long time for the two of you to start to want to play together or make love with each other. You've just gone in a bad direction.
Mm. Beautifully said. There's a lot of great audios on heart brain coherence,
right.
You know, because you got the emotional neurons in the heart, 40,000 or something. So when you connect with that.
And you're in charge of that. You're in charge. You can actually flip a switch and get your heart back open, and it changes your tone. It changes the receptivity you've got. Mm. It makes you able to hear without judgment or cutting the person off.
Mm. Beautiful. So what's the best way? Because I really want listeners to pick up your book.
Okay.
This is an amazing book. What's the best way that folks can get a hold of your book, The Dilemma of the 21st Century Male, and find out more about you?
If you go to Amazon.com, you can find it. If you go to www.themaledilemma.com, you can find out about the book. I urge people, you know, disagree with whatever you disagree with, throw out whatever you don't want to use, but benefit for your life from the stuff that other people have taught me. These are things my clients have taught me that work. I didn't make the stuff up.
Well, that's very humble of you. I know you studied for many years and researched, and I have been an amazing psychologist and speaker and writer. And you've written how many books now? 14?
Yeah, I'm happy when I'm writing.
Oh my gosh. I am just so impressed with you. Thank you so much for coming on the couch today.
Thank you.
It's been great to have you. And some of the other books you can get will be listed in the archives, which will be up and available, on Sunday, if you really want to get more into the archives and read more about Len Felder and get his books. That will be available. Otherwise, if you missed a little bit of this show and you want to tune in and have a rerun or download our show today, you can do it right now as soon as we get off the air. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. This is Dr. Michelle, and it's so nice to have you with me as always. As I always do say as well, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. And that's the way it works in the world, really. All right, talk to you next week. We're going to be helping you out with relationships and some of the mistakes that you might be making in finding the right person to come into your life. Thanks for listening, guys. Bye-bye.
Come back here.